Since the 1800s, the Stibnite mine near McCall has been mined off and on for gold and antimony, a metal which is used in batteries and flame retardant. Miners left open pits and dug up stream beds that, according to a 2015 report by the U.S. Geological Survey, still continues to leak things like cyanide and mercury and other toxic metals into the Salmon River. And today, Midas Gold owns that mine project, and the company plans to start mining again. This has many people, especially those who live and recreate in Valley County, as well as along the Salmon River, questioning the value of this project. Midas Gold officials say it will bring jobs to the area, and they will make sure the project is safe. They also go on to say they will restore habitat along the river. However, opponents wonder if this will be another boom-or-bust operation, and will it really be good for the environment? And Native American tribes claim the project will disrupt native lands. Since there are so many questions regarding this project, we are spending our first half hour today discussing this. Joining me live in studio are Mackenzie Lyon, Vice President of Public Affairs for Midas Gold, Rocky Barker, retired environmental reporter for the Idaho Statesman, Tom Blanchard, a mining historian, and Emmett Taylor Jr. joins us live on the telephone. He is a Watershed Division Manager for the Nez Perce Tribe. Welcome to the program, everyone.
Thank you.
That is a long introduction, but there is a long history. So, Rocky, I'd like to start with you and quickly give us a brief history and what some are calling this restoration mining project.
Well, I have covered Stibnite for a long time, mostly cleanup activities that have been gone on. The state of Idaho did a big project about 20 years ago, but they still left a big mess. There's a place called the Glory Hole that was where they were digging, and a lot of heavy metals, continued to come out of that after the mining, and even the cleanup didn't solve that. So Midas came in knowing that they were going to have to, really work on. They've got a big job of public relations ahead of them because people there have seen this mine. And they came up with this idea and proposal to do restoration work even before they mine. And then they've got restoration work they want to do beforehand, and then they're going to have to do reclamation work afterwards. And so, as you, I think, accurately portrayed, there's a lot of people who are skeptical about all of this.
And Mackenzie, I want to bring you into the conversation, being a representative for Midas Gold. This is making some big promises. How do you propose that this happens?
Well, I think, first of all, you're absolutely right to first focus on the history of the Stibnite District and the legacies that remain there today. When Midas Gold came into the district, not only did we evaluate it for the economic value and resources that are still there, but we also, from the very beginning, started to evaluate how can this project also bring the environmental cleanup that needs to happen. And there are a number of ways that we've built that into the very foundation of the Stibnite Gold Project. The first, like Rocky mentioned, is not waiting to clean up until the very end. Instead, looking for opportunities to fix the largest source of sedimentation in the watershed in the very first years of operation, in putting into our plan a real viable solution to get the East Fork of the South Fork of the Salmon River, which today dumps directly into an abandoned mining pit, blocking fish migration to historic spawning grounds. By year 7 of our plan, we begin backfilling that pit and reconfiguring the river back to its natural state. So we built in not just promises, we built in actions to our plan. And those actions will be required of us by the federal and state regulators for the plan that is submitted and then approved.
Tom, you are a mining historian. You have looked at many mining projects. Good things, bad things about this proposal?
Well, let me start with jobs. This is a huge opportunity and a huge challenge. Midas will incorporate a very, very large workforce over a very, very short period of time. And so I'm going to speak about some of the social economic consequences in the communities around rather than in the environmental consequences. That's a whole other story. But they are speaking of ramping up over a three-year period to 1,000 jobs, which will accrete additional community jobs that may be equal to that size. Then they come down to the 600 range. But overall, I think the community can look at about 1,200 in that range jobs being created in a three-year period, which means a huge influx into the community. And whether the community has the capacity to absorb that, it's a pretty small county. I think they're probably at 11,000 people right now. This could bring a 25% increase over a three-year period, putting pressure on all of the infrastructure and services that communities offer. And I'm not sure that those communities are ready to, they're not in a position to handle that right now. And the question then is how, in addition to forward thinking in terms of environmental cleanup and activities, how do we deal with the community and help those communities prepare for this? Because they're going to have levels of service that have got to ramp up equal with the number of employment going on, and that would include the full range of governmental services. So it's an extraordinary challenge. And right now I don't see as much emphasis going into how the company is going to handle and work with the communities to handle some of those challenges as I see them addressing what they see as the environmental challenges.
And Emmett, I'd like to bring you into the conversation. Being with the Nez Perce tribe, what are the tribe's main concerns about this proposed project moving forward?
Well, first of all, I'd just like to say thank you very much for having me on the program and a part of this conversation. Very important conversation, and it's just an extremely complicated project. You know, the tribe, of course, we have reserved treaty rights down there that tribal members still exercise to this day, and there's been fish populations of salmon, steelhead, you know, there's been other species that have been, you know, their habitat's been degraded and these species have gone down to the point where we've had spring, summer Chinooks almost go to the level of being extinct. And we've been able to, over the years, through restoration work since the mid-1990s, we've been very active working with some partners in getting those salmon runs back up to where they're nowhere near viable, but we have the populations that are starting to sustain themselves in the East Fork end and Johnson Creek in the South Fork salmon. But this project, you know, the tribe, you know, with this mine coming back, proposed to be put back online, it's at the headwaters of these salmon rivers. And so we have to take a very close look at what impacts this possibly could happen. And we have put a tremendous amount of resources into evaluating that. And after we're all said and done and looking all that, the risks with this project is just way too great. And, you know, with all due respect, you know, the way Midas puts it forth is a restoration, plan of restoration and operations. And, you know, we'd have to disagree with that. I mean, the bottom line, this is a mining operation that has 4 to 5 million ounces of gold, $6.5 billion. This is a mining operation, and it's going to be big. It's going to be three times as big as the site impacts that are there currently right now. There's a lot of things in this plan that are very questionable. You know, we could get into a lot of detail, and I think we'd probably need a lot more than a half an hour to get into all of the things that are concerning, you know, from a water quality standpoint, you know, from the passage to just the things that are going to happen and be left on the landscape after this is done, from the pit lakes that are going to be left on the landscape, the 400-foot dam with mine tailings behind it. All of these things that are in the headwaters of these salmon streams are just extremely concerning and just too much of a risk for, you know, for us to get behind. And so we are not, the tribe has formally through a resolution has come out to in opposition of this mine.
And Mackenzie, you're running into these issues. You know, this is, as Tom mentioned, it's a PR issue in a lot of regards. How, when you have the tribe coming out in opposition, it doesn't look like they're going to budge. What do you do with that?
I think there are a couple of things. First of all, I think many people, myself included, are skeptical when it comes to mining. And in large part, that is due to the fact that when we think about mining, we think about projects 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago and the impacts that they've had. And we're not necessarily taking a closer look at the process and the regulatory environment that we're held to today. Today, to permit a mine in the United States, we are held up to the strictest environmental regulations around the globe. It's a 3 to 7 year process of scientific review. It's iterative. It looks at data. And at the end of the day, it is identifying what plan is best for the environment and the people around it. And this process that also involves public input really demands that at the end of the day, the project that moves forward is sound and safe and good for the environment and does the right thing. I would also say that in my own skepticism, it was really important for me to meet the people behind modern mining and to understand that we live here. We're raising our families here. We care about these rivers and this land and doing the right thing. The Stibnite Gold Project is unique in that it is a mining project, yes.
And there's a lot of money.
And there's a lot of money. But that is how we establish cleanup. This site will not get cleaned up unless there is profit and industry that comes back. And there's some poetic justice to the fact that it is mining that will go back and clean up these legacies of the past.
And Rocky?
Well, and you know, this is their challenge, is they want to get from us the idea that they are a different, it's different than it was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, both Tom and I were here 20 years ago, and we watched another Idaho company, Hecla, promised us the same kind of, we're going to do it different, we live here, and they ended up with Grouse Creek with a big mess. And this is the challenge that these guys have. And one of the things we Idahoans have to do, both in dealing with the social economic issues that Tom talks about, but with the environmental issues, is about bonding. Mm. We've got to make sure that those costs that we, the public, are going to incur are covered by these folks. And, you know, their idea of restoration, I think, is a good idea that for them to do this, but then they've got to be able to follow through in a way that, frankly, Hecla did not 20 years ago.
Tom?
Well, one of my major concerns is that the best laid plans never come out exactly the way you plan them. We did a study of the major mines through the 70s that came online. There isn't a single plan out there from the big mines in Idaho that was able to complete its plan as planned. But once you get the record of decision through the agencies, it's very difficult to go back in and change that record. It's a very difficult, long process. But in the meantime, you may have critical change, either environmental or social, that you've got to address fairly quickly before it gets out of control. And that's very difficult to do as you're moving forward. And so I'm sure they do live in the community and have the best, most optimistic thoughts. But there's nothing more optimistic than a miner, and I got to tell you, of all the people and engineers, you put the two together, you've got a group of people that think that they can literally, we can do it. We can do it. And that's a great attitude to have, but sometimes it gets you way, way out on the branch.
Well, and I would add to that it's not just hope. We have spent years of scientific data gathering and review and engineering to really put forward a plan that can work. And now through the NEPA process, that is exactly why it's there. It's to ensure that it does work. And then even after that record of decision, we are held every single day through construction until the last tree is planted in our reclamation plan to ensure that we are held to those standards and that we do them. And financial assurance today is much different than it was you know, for mines permitted back in the 70s, if they were permitted through NEPA.
We're going to be bringing in some listener questions. We have had many listeners comment and question. So one that we will get to is from our listener, Galen. And he says, how can this mine avoid or lessen a boom or bust cycle in the local economy? I'd like to answer that question. But first, take a listen to what one concerned listener, Fred Coriel, had to say about this project.
I think the best way to describe it is it's a thorn in everyone's side, because there's so much going on here. There's so many other issues that we're working through, you know, whether it's public land access or trails or, you know, within the city maintaining roads, dealing with our housing crisis, labor shortage. You know, those issues are there at the forefront. The Midas Gold proposal, in one sense, can exacerbate some of those issues. And so it really is kind of a thorn in everyone's side. As we're trying to deal with our immediate future, now we have to really think long term, 10, 15, 20 years down the road.
We are continuing our conversation around the Stibnite Mining Project in Valley County. We have had numerous listener questions and comments about this project, and we do want to get to those questions right now. First, let me reintroduce my panel. Joining me live in studio are Mackenzie Lyon, Vice President of Public Affairs for Midas Gold, Rocky Barker, retired environmental reporter for the Idaho Statesman, and Tom Blanchard, a mining historian. We also have on the phone live Emmett Taylor Jr. He is the Watershed Division Manager for the Nez Perce Tribe. Welcome back, everyone. We left the last segment from a question from a listener, Galen, and he asks, how can this mine avoid or lessen a boom or bust cycle in the local economy? And Mackenzie, why don't we start with you?
Thank you. It really comes down to planning, communication, and transparency. So when we look at the overall employment impact, what the most recent in-plan study identified was that we will directly hire about 500 people. We anticipate that about half of that will come from the broader economic region, and about 120 people may move directly into that region, which includes both Valley County and Adams County. So we're looking at a fairly dispersed impact when it comes to employment. We also then look at the notion of transparency. And recently, we've initiated this concept of a community agreement. And it really focuses on how we make sure that through the life of the project, we are living out the values that we have worked on up to date, which is to be forthright and transparent with communities. The first step in the community agreement is to establish a community advisory council, where representatives from each of the nearby communities sit around a table and have direct access guaranteed to the company to help identify and to look forward and say, okay, here's what we see, what we project coming forward. How can we work on solutions together as a region? Mm-hmm. And those are two ways that we can really help mitigate and take advantage of growth that will occur.
And Emmett, how is this something that the tribe is concerned about, is this idea of boom or bust, and how it would affect, as you said, those headwaters with the Chinook spawning grounds?
Yes. You know, for the tribe, you know, the tribe is always looking after future generations, seven generations down the road, making sure that we do the right things on the landscape and then do the restoration work to fix the degradation so that that's always available to not only tribal members but to non-tribal members, that all these resources are so important for. And so, you know, when you're speaking of the long term, you know, that's, again, you know, the risks are just so great with a project like this. And, you know, I know it was stated before that in order to clean the site up, you have to have a big mine like this to make the money to do it. I would have to somewhat disagree with that or disagree with it because, you know, not to say that it's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult to do. It's going to take a lot of work. But that's what the tribe would like to see on this landscape, is a really a focus on restoring the site that's had over 100 years of mining on it. And, you know, if the mine goes through and the things that we were just talking about, those things are going to be put onto the landscape, and the potential for catastrophes to happen and the water quality and how that could just go all the way down into the East Fork, South Fork, the South Fork salmon, down to the Snake, all the way down, impacts are going to be felt. And so, yes, the tribe is very much focused on the long term and wanting to make sure that, you know, that always stays in the forefront.
And speaking of those issues with the environment, we have another listener, Amani, and she asked, how will this mine ensure that the following doesn't happen? And there's a long list. She said sinkholes, loss of biodiversity, contamination of soil, groundwater, surface water, as well as noise, air, and visual pollution. And I know, Mackenzie, you'd like to answer that. But, Rocky, I'd kind of like to get your perspective on this as well, having just covered the environment for so long here in Idaho.
Well, I think Mackenzie was correct that they are going to face a lot of strict environmental laws, none stricter than the Endangered Species Act, protecting those salmon and other species in that area. And I will tell you, that's a very high bar. It's such a high bar that getting that approval, along with, frankly, getting the approval of the Nez Perce tribe, are likely their toughest hurdles. And so, you know, they're going to have to figure out how to do that, those two things. And I think one of the ways they can do that is having a very, high bonding. We can demand of them that they be able to cover those costs so that we can ensure, perhaps to the Nez Perce, that restoration work and reclamation work, both of them, will get done. And it could be, I mean, I can't speak. I think it's going to be very tough, but I would suggest that maybe getting the Nez Perce involved in that restoration might be one way to get them to feel a lot more comfortable about how it's being done.
And Mackenzie, two things there. A, would Midas Gold be willing to work with the Nez Perce tribe? And also, is Midas Gold willing to have a high bond like that? You know, I mean, it's that perennial phrase, you put some skin in the game.
Emphatically yes to both. In fact, we've been working with the Nez Perce tribe over a number of years to gather their feedback into the project to figure out how we can make it better, and really identifying that we have very common goals. We both want to see the East Fork of the South Fork of the Salmon River restored to its natural flow. We both want to see fish migrating back to miles of historic spawning ground, and we both want to see that the water is clean. And I firmly believe that we can do that together, and that's the attitude that Midas Gold brings to the table. As far as bonding is concerned, in Idaho, currently, to bond, to put money aside for reclamation, it's a per-acre fee, $15,000 per acre. Rather than taking that model, Midas Gold has committed to a model called CERCE, the standard reclamation calculator tool. It was developed by a mix of people in the industry, by regulators, by tribes, and by NGOs. And what makes it so unique is that for the first time, we have a tool to calculate that cost based on actual costs. So David Bacon wages, actual cost for reclamation, and the real things that are happening on the ground. The last time a mining company in Idaho used this tool, rather than bonding for the $15,000 per acre, their total bond number was closer to $90,000 an acre. And so if that's not putting a skin in the game, I don't know what is. And we are absolutely committed to making sure that that money is set aside.
Emmett, is there any way that the tribe, the Nez Perce tribe, at some point would be willing to move forward with this project? Or is that just completely off the table at this point?
Well, you know, at current point, the tribe has come out officially in opposition of this mine. That's not to say that the tribe is never there, you know, or willing to listen to new information or new ways that something might be done. The bonding, which is still not clear to the tribe yet, you know, what that's looking like. The tribe is always open to listen to new information and new ideas. But, you know, just with all of the information that we have right now, like I said before, and all of the risks associated with it, we've looked at other mines, too. And unfortunately, you know, the tribe, there's just not another mine out there that you could point to that says that, yeah, this is something that's going to be good. I appreciate Midas's enthusiasm, you know, to for the some of the restoration things, but a lot of that is just is so uncertain, and there's so much risk to it that, you know, maybe we can at some point, but right now, at this point in time, with the information we have, the tribe just can't support it.
I want to get to two more questions very quickly, if I can, before we go into the break. Laura from Boise, and Tom, this goes back to something that you said. She says a large rapid increase in commercial activity will inevitably tax local infrastructure. She says, for example, roads, electricity, water. So how will Midas Gold avoid having the financial burden fall onto local and state taxpayers? Is that, I mean, how do you do that, Mackenzie?
Some of that falls to the permitting process, whereby if we will need a transportation permit from the Idaho Department of Transportation, which will evaluate upgrades to the infrastructure that need to be done, and that falls on us. Through the community agreements that I also discussed, that is the opportunity for the communities to identify, hey, here's where we're feeling the rub. And it's really difficult right now to project forward to exactly what it's going to look like and who's going to be coming in from the community or what type of economic growth will come from it. But what we do know is that establishing a forum to talk about it before it happens and identify it early is the best opportunity to really control it and give local communities the forward voice on how to control it. And I will say that is something that is very unique, and you can't look to history. You can't look to past mining projects to find companies doing this at this point in a project.
And Rocky and Tom, I know both of you wanted to comment on that. You want to start, Tom?
Well, and I support the community agreement that I think all the communities need to be involved in that. But I think Midas needs to take a step further and talk to those communities about how Midas can help them identify their impacts and balance that against the promised taxes that are mentioned in their reports that would help the community understand where their shortfalls are and then negotiate a second agreement. And I think that's the critical thing. There really needs to be two community agreements. The first one is that they sit down and talk because that's critical. But the second one is that they've got to come up with another agreement that Midas agrees that they have a social responsibility there in areas where impacts are beyond the anticipated tax revenues or the general revenues that come as a result of this project. The cities don't have other means to address.
Rocky?
Well, she talked about what the different bonding idea that they are talking about, which I think is a good idea. Interestingly enough, Idaho isn't even talking about doing that for all mining in the state. And I think that that's we need to be looking at this on the larger level that nationally, for instance, the Idaho Conservation League won a national lawsuit requiring all major projects like this to have to do that kind of bonding. And as soon as the Trump administration got in, they threw out the EPA's proposal to address that lawsuit. And so, you know, there's going to have to be, you know, a lot of, signing on the dotted line to ensure that that's done.
Very, very quickly, because we are out of time. Mackenzie, a question from Peter from McCall. What is the timeline for this project and how long will it last?
Well, as I mentioned, the NEPA process is long and complicated in its review. What we estimate right now is that the public will have an opportunity to see a draft environmental impact statement in May of 2019. That then opens a public comment window for 30 to 45 days. After that, agencies will go back, review, incorporate any relevant needed comments or changes into a final draft environmental impact statement, and then a record of decision about a year later. From there, we envision a 2 to 3 year construction period, 12, 15 years of mining, and then 5+ years of final reclamation and closure.
I want to thank all of my guests for coming in today. I know we could continue to talk about this, but I do appreciate your time and the clarification. My guest today, Mackenzie Lyon, Vice President of Public Affairs for Midas Gold, Rocky Barker, retired environmental reporter for the Idaho Statesman, Tom Blanchard, a mining historian, and Emmett Taylor Jr., Watershed Division Manager for the Nez Perce Tribe. Thank you all for coming in today.
Thank you very much.